This is Spectrum West, where the arts, culture, and humanities of West Wisconsin are the topic of discussion. I'm Al Ross. Welcome. Today, we expand our reach yet again with a program featuring classical music, poetry, theater, and roller derby. Yes, Jim Oliver brings us a preview of The Grapes of Wrath from Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls, part of the Big Read event saturating the St. Croix River Valley. Roses are red, violets are blue. I know it's National Poetry Month. How about you? Today, we welcome a couple gentlemen who have the word poet in their honorary titles. Get ready to learn how you, too, can celebrate the art. They're called Chippewa Valley Roller Girls. From all walks of life, they converge on a flat track strapped into roller skates, strategically padded and protected, trying to score points for the home team. Roller Derby, Western Wisconsin style, a first-hand perspective on today's Spectrum West. And here's where we begin. A week from Saturday, the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra closes out its season with a concert delicately sprinkled with guests and with a playlist that has evolved over time, I found out. One thing that hasn't changed is the concert title. It's American Dreams. And to find out more about what we can expect, I rang the doorbell at the studio of Echo musical director Ivar Lundy, Jr. And I began our conversation by noting that, like the upcoming April 16th concert, it's been a season of guests, including guest conductors. When this is all over, you will have conducted the first and the last concerts of this season. So how has Ivar Lundy looked at the season? Has it seemed a bit strange to you?
Initially, it was. Actually, it was quite odd in the beginning because, you know, you build up for the season and all of a sudden you're out of the picture. But I was still the music director, so that worked.
You had a hand in figuring out who the guests were going to be?
Yes, I was supposed to be the person they would consult in terms of programming, and in most cases it worked out.
How many years is this season now?
Well, this was our 18th season, so we have been around for a while now. So next one is the 19th, and I might actually do one more next year.
Let's pretend that Saturday's concert is over and you're looking back on the season. High points that you can remember? Obviously, you didn't conduct all of them, but you were in attendance, I'm sure, and you knew what it was like.
That's a very difficult question. You have your own taste and you have your own experiences and whatnot, and to really couple that with other people, you know, you try very hard in your rehearsals to do certain things, and other people are not always as adamant about things that you paid attention to. But the main thing here is that the orchestra has to really come with the feeling that they did something very special. And I think by and large, they were quite excited about what they were doing. They had good music. And that's that, you know. We had, after each performance with the guest conductors, the musicians had an opportunity to write some words about each of the guest conductors. Now, these were guest conductors. You know, they were not really auditioning for the next season. So they would write things, and that was very important for them. It's very important for the orchestra to be involved in what's happening. And Echo has always done that.
So was it tough to hand off the baton? Did you find that delegating was a bit more difficult than you thought it would be? Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra's been your baby for a number of years.
Actually, to be honest with you, it was easier than I thought it would be. I would say that when I retired from the university, that's probably worse situation, because I really missed teaching, missed my students. In this particular case, it's a different environment altogether. Echo has always been a family thing, you know. The orchestra, they socialize, they are part of decision making, and as people have said when they come to visit with us in the orchestra, they say, well, this is very friendly. So we have a good atmosphere in the orchestra, and that's the main part.
Visiting face-to-face with Ivar Lundy Jr., he is musical director of the Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra. Their concert is Saturday, April 16th. It's called American Dreams, and it's at Grace Lutheran Church, as usual in Eau Claire. This is a concert that's strewn with a number of guests. There's a guest host, Stephanie Elkins, from a place I'm familiar with, Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a pre-concert discussion at 6:45. And then tell us about Jerry Owen. He's a composer, and he's from Iowa.
Yes, he is a retired professor of music at Cole University. So happens that Paula Lenz, who is the president of the board of ECHO, studied with him. So she has an inside line to this composer, and she is very excited about his music. So she has been actually been advocating for some time that we should do some of his music. And I said, you know, let's see if we can put together an all-American program. I always feel funny that we tend to do music by dead European males. That's what my wife usually says. So in this particular case, we have all alive American composers.
Wonderful. And his piece is called Suite from Grant Wood Country. Ivar Lundy Jr. has an original. It's a concerto for piano and orchestra, Opus 126. Yeah, I'm always curious as to how someone comes up with a name for what it is they've written. Now, yours doesn't have anything flowery. It's just concerto for piano and orchestra. But how does one come up with the opus? I think a lot of people might be curious about that.
Well, the opus really means work, so that, you know, you have, this is my second work, this is my third work, and so forth. So this is actually my 127th work. Yeah, I think there's a mistake in the program. That's my fault, probably. Everything is my fault anyway.
Yes, you have to take all the blame as well as the credit for a lot of things. So we should change that. It's Opus 127. We don't want to shortchange your work.
Oh, no. Actually, there are some of my works are not available for public viewing or listening. Yeah.
Then you also have some guests in the form of Ed Willett and Cheryl Leah. Now, Ed is he's a very accomplished and versatile cellist, isn't he?
He was at one time playing with the Honolulu Symphony, and I have heard him in concert many times, and I actually played with him too in concerts. The reason why he is playing on the concert is because I wanted him to be there. And I think it was a year and a half ago when we played up in Bayfield, I asked him, you know, would you like to do something, or do you have something that the chamber orchestra can do? And he said he thought about it for a while, and then he sent me an email saying that he had something. And they actually are doing a piece that they wrote many years ago and now have revised. They were actually traveling in Scotland last summer, with a shortened and a smaller ensemble than what we are doing now.
The piece is called A Cantata for the Peaceful Rain. I thought that fits April very well, being obviously April showers bring May flowers.
Yeah, well, here goes another one. You see, he rewrote the piece.
Oh, okay. So you're going to change on me again.
Yes, I have to change on you again. And this is in reference to John Muir, University of the Wilderness. That's what it's called now. Now, The Peaceful Rain is actually in the piece, because that's a poem that was written by Cheryl Leah. So there are other things in the piece, too. Holy Ground was the Auberne piece, listed separately in the season brochure and in the season program. But as usual, you know, things do change. About a month and a half ago, I got a new score, and things had changed.
Well, thank goodness people like surprises, because you're giving us some. That's great.
Well, we like to do familiar things, but we also like to do some adventurous things. The musicians actually have been a little bit uptight about this, because we are doing music that nobody has ever heard. And that frightens people. This is what makes life so exciting sometimes. And we had our first rehearsal just a little while ago, and I think they feel better about it now.
Let's also not forget about Elizabeth Hart. She's a featured soloist on what? Or is she even included anymore? Am I going to be blindsided again? No, she's still here. Okay, good.
No, she's actually there. I listened to her this morning, as a matter of fact, as well. So she's playing the piano concerto as the soloist on the piano. She's actually the reason why we have the piece on the program. She heard a kind of a computerized version of it a little more than a year ago and said, you know, would it be possible for me to play it? And I said, well, I hadn't really budgeted for that because it's a bigger orchestra and it wasn't really written for Echo, again, because it's a bigger orchestra. But I said, you know, it's my last chance. And I had said to people, I was very excited about the piece, but I said, I'll probably never hear it. So having the opportunity to have it done, I was very excited. Really, I was.
Isn't that the first thing you want to do after you finish a piece of music, is to hear an orchestra play it?
Well, of course, but, you know, it's not that easy.
No. After you finish a piece of music, do you shop it around, hoping someone will pick it up and play it? Or does it sit there and there's going to be this wonderful Lundy Archives someday that people will find and make a bunch of money on?
Classical music, no. There's no money really in that, no. I don't know what to say, actually. I'm happy that it's being performed. I have many pieces that have never been performed. And yes, shopping around is what I used to do. Now I decided some years ago, after I retired from university, that I really write for myself, which is very egotistical, I guess. But I would like to write in my style, not in the style that's normally accepted by the majority of my colleagues. It's a little different. Actually, it has some jazz elements in it, too. Jazzy chords, yeah.
Does your style have a description?
It's tonal music. It has quite a bit of rhythmic syncopations. Try to make it more, shall we say, American than what I definitely used to write. Some years ago, more of the so-called classical composers wrote music that nobody wanted to listen to, because it was atonal and it was far out, as they would say, you know. Now the younger generation has embraced the older styles and made more out of that, and it's much more tonal. My piece has some interesting issues in it, definitely, but it's a mild piece as far as style is concerned. It's an acceptable style, and I think most people will like it. You know, I don't normally say I like my pieces. I get very critical. But there are some pieces that I really like. This is, if I have to say it myself, probably one of my best pieces.
So we'll see that on your face Saturday, April 16th.
I hope so.
The always exciting and pleasantly unpredictable Eau Claire Chamber Orchestra in concert under the comfortable direction of Ivar Lundy Jr. Saturday, the 16th, Grace Lutheran Church, Eau Claire, 7:30 p.m. Pre-concert discussion at 6:45, featuring Stephanie Elkins of Wisconsin Public Radio's Morning Classics, as well as Simply Folk. She will also hostess the concert herself and itself. Chippewa Valley Roller Girls, introduction to the sport and a participant. Jim Oliver's here with news of a classic play. And next, April is about poetry on Spectrum West. Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from Luther College, committed to a liberal arts education that connects faith with learning, freedom with responsibility, and life's work with service. On the web at luther.edu. It's National Poetry Month. Of course, our Spectrum West audience is so perspicacious, that might be a wasted notice. And that could very well be the first time I've ever used the word perspicacious. But some people who get all tingly at the thought of and the celebration of National Poetry Month, Poets Laureate. We invited a couple to sit and chat. Bruce Taylor, the City of Eau Claire's Vicar of Verse, and Lemoyne McLaughlin, he's the Reverend of Rhyme in Amory, Wisconsin. Bruce Taylor, what's going on?
For National Poetry Month, we're trying to get a little campaign going, urging people to buy books by local poets, give them to friends, or keep them for themselves. We're calling it Reading Local.
When we talk Amory, Wisconsin, that's local.
That is. I've got some books in Eau Claire.
Yeah. You have a new one, don't you?
I'm working on a new one.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Happy National Poetry Month, both of you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
On the phone is Lemoyne McLaughlin, Poet Laureate of Amory, and, of course, Director of the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts. And in the studio with us, Bruce Taylor. He's Poet Laureate for the City of Eau Claire. This, by the way, after going online and reading about it, it's the largest literary celebration in the world.
Yes, indeed. I was surprised to find some statistics that they had online.
Yeah.
That sort of flies in the face of people saying that, you know, poetry doesn't matter and no one's involved with it.
Yeah.
A million people in the United States read poems at poet.org each year.
Wow.
A million people. 365,000 students participated in the 2014 Poetry Memorization and Recitation Contest, Poetry Out Loud. And the list goes on and on.
Some of the times that I've had Lemoyne on, he's also one who is a little bit chagrined that some statistics prove people aren't reading poetry as much as they used to. National Poetry Month is good for you, right, Lemoyne?
Oh, absolutely. Bruce, to respond to your concern there, that there was a panel on Minnesota Public Television about 2 months ago found that only 2% of Americans read poetry anymore.
Yeah, I'm an English major, so I can't do the math, but I wonder if you've run 2% into the population of America. That's not a bad number, it seems to me.
No, well, and it might be a million.
And, you know, one of the things, Lemoyne, that I'm absolutely sure of is that there's probably more people writing poetry now, going to poetry readings, workshops, conferences, than perhaps there have ever been in this country.
Some of the big places that I found online, you mentioned poets.org. There is an Academy of American Poets and American Poets Magazine. Are you guys familiar with that?
Not to the second one, no.
No, I'm not familiar with that either.
I would add, too, there's a Poetry 180, Poems a Day you can go to. There's a poetryhunter.com that I want to talk about a little later. Poetry Out Loud, Poetry Archive, Poem a Day, many services you can sign up for, like the Writer's Almanac. Mm-hmm. And they will send you a poem a day in your email.
Talk about them now. Since you brought them up, I'm on a toothpick of excitement here.
That doesn't sound particularly pleasurable.
It's not comfortable.
One of the things I thought I would do to sort of prepare is to look at poems on poetry, poetry about poetry. And one of the sites I came up to is poetryhunter.com. And on that site, they had 10 pages. It was at least 50 poems apiece on each page about poetry. Needless to say, probably out of those 500, not all of them were completely very good.
Yeah.
But one of the things I found really fascinating is they have an element of the site that when you go and you look at a poem, this robot voice reads it to you out loud. I mean, one of those computer voices. It is so disconcerting. And it so makes you realize how important the personal voice is to poetry.
Yeah. So now, Lemoyne, you live in a much smaller town. How's poetry doing in the hinterland of western and northwestern Wisconsin?
I travel around to all of the libraries. I've read in all of the libraries in Burnett, Polk, St. Croix, a little bit done in Eau Claire. And I always get good audiences, but I would have to say that, you know, if we depended upon our livelihood in terms of selling books of poetry, I think we would be filled with starvation indeed.
Amen, brother.
Do you find people in unexpected places writing poetry?
Well, we've got a very active writers group. All of the writers write poetry. My problem with it is I think we haven't done the best recent years of teaching what poetry is all about. Almost anything now passes as poetry. We don't separate prose from poetry anymore, so we get a whole lot of prose, and people listen to that and they say, huh? I think we need to do a better job of education of poetry.
Agree with that, Bruce?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we all have the, you know, those awful stories that happen to us or someone we know, that initial early experiences, particularly in school, with poetry have not been the most pleasant or the most rewarding. It took me years to get into Walt Whitman or Emily Dickinson, I think mostly because they had been taught very badly to me in elementary and high school.
We have on the phone Lemoyne McLaughlin, Poet Laureate of Amory and Director of the Northern Lakes Center for the Arts, same place, Bruce Taylor in the studio with us. He's Poet Laureate of Eau Claire. I went online, and I'm just going to toss these out because they may be some thought starters for you. I know, Bruce, you came with a bunch of material, and Lemoyne, you probably have some thoughts you want to get up. Online, there was a list of 30 ways to celebrate National Poetry Month, and what I did is I grabbed 14 of them. Here they are. Sign up for Poem a Day and read a poem each morning. Memorize a poem. Encourage a young person to participate in the Dear Poet Project. Buy a book of poetry from your local bookstore. That's right, up Bruce's alley there. He's talking about. Learn about more poets and poetry events in your state. Ask your governor or mayor for a proclamation in support of National Poetry Month. Attend a poetry reading at a local university, bookstore, cafe, or library. Read a poem at an open mic. You guys are both familiar with those. Start a poetry reading group. Chalk a poem on a sidewalk. Celebrate National Poem in Your Pocket Day, which is April 21st. You select a poem you love, you carry it with you, and then you share it with coworkers, family, and friends.
That has been going on for quite a while. It has been very, very successful, I think.
Three more. Subscribe to American Poets Magazine or a small press poetry journal. Sign up for a poetry class or workshop. And here's one I like. Get ready for Mother's Day by making a card featuring a line of poetry. You could do that for any holiday.
Sure, absolutely. And you don't, you know, the poem in your pocket thing, it doesn't have to be just April 21st. It could be your thing. You could just be the person that walks around with little slips of paper with poems on them and gives them to people.
Is that a poem in your pocket, or are you just happy to see it?
If we have time, I actually have a poem called The Poem in My Pocket.
Should we listen to that?
Do that.
There it comes. He's shuffling his papers. Nice thing about being radio, we can hear can hear all the sound effects.
Right.
Going
and
through
here
the paper.
The poem is not as well organized. It's called The Poem in Your Pocket. Is a rag full of snot, a concealed weapon you have no permit for, a mobile device, a key to a door you never lock or even use, loose change to spend in the ears of strangers, a list you need to remember, a note you've already forgot, a nest of spent tissues, a well too deep for wishes. It's a pocket full of pockets, each with its own hole in it. It lives on lint and ink. It is not afraid of the dark.
There you go.
Yeah.
That works. Do you have a short poem, Lemoyne, you want to share? Did you grab anything?
Sure. I've got, you know, how many do you want? Maybe this is one. You know, I think free verse has gone in the direction of prose. Here's one that I call an ardent plea for formality, formal verse versus free verse.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a crusty, wrinkled sonnet with grungy dust and mold upon it. Too often free verse seems to me a disguise for verbal diarrhea.
I salute you, sir. That is one of the best rhymes I have ever heard in my entire life.
So now whenever I look over a crowd, and there was a photograph on the National Poetry Month website, a guy reading a poem, and there was a crowd behind him, and everybody was grinning and smiling. Whenever I look over a crowd listening to a poet, there are usually grins and smiles. Why is that?
Well, there's much to smile about, I think. Not just humor, you know, but an aesthetic pleasure. And I think that most poets realize that when they're giving a poetry reading, that their job is at least as much to entertain as well as to instruct in delight. Is that what they said in the 18th century, I mm-hmm. think? You've got to make the people want to come back.
There are avid, voracious readers out there listening, but maybe they don't read poetry. What does poetry do for an individual that reading the other stuff doesn't?
What comes to mind immediately is a line from Robert Frost, the aim was song. When we think of reading in general, we think maybe of taking that book into the quiet corner of a room by ourselves and immersing ourselves in those pages. I think we need more poetry read aloud. One of the essential elements of poetry are its musical aspects. You can only hear that read aloud. I mean, you don't look at a page of music. Well, I suppose you can, and see the music on the page and say, oh, this is wonderful. But with poetry, you need to hear it read aloud.
I absolutely agree, you know, and we're fortunate enough to have two or three ongoing poetry reading series here in Eau Claire. And for National Poetry Month, a number of events scheduled at the local store, Volume 1, Also at the Ellie Phillips Library on the 12th, there's going to be an open reading. Anybody can come down and read their stuff. And then on the 21st, I think there's going to be a reading at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center, the Janet Carson Gallery. And I'm sure I've left out more. But if you go to, you know, these organizations, the Library Volume 1 or the Regional Arts Center, you'll find more information about this stuff.
How about up there in Amory, Lemoyne?
On April 30th, our theater people are doing a reading of Edgar Lee Masters' Spoon River Anthology.
Wonderful. We haven't, during this conversation, as a final point, mentioned young people. K through 12 are listed in the National Poetry Month website. And I think it's a bottom-line fact that the future of poetry relies on young people, as does a lot of things that are established and hope to continue.
Yeah, you know, next month, on May the 2nd Tuesday, I don't know what exact date that is, at the Ellie Phillips Library, we're going to have our second or third student poetry reading, particularly for middle school students.
Oh, neat.
It's been organized the last 3 years by Ken Szymanski, who is a fine, fine writer himself, a great teacher. And those nights are just soul cleansing. You see these kids, 14 years old, they get up and they just do it. When I was 14, and somebody asked me to do that, I would just curl up in a fetal position, I think.
How about up in Amory, Lemoyne, the young people, poetry in good hands?
We always encourage young people. I read poetry and take artwork into local public schools once a month, Amory, Clayton, and Clear Lake. We have a lot of fun.
And you have young people crossing the threshold of the Northern Lake Center for the Arts regularly?
Exactly.
Also this month in Chippewa at the Heidi Arts Center, Greg Adams, who's a local teacher and a fine songwriter and poet himself, has organized sort of a poetry slam. Again, I'm not sure exactly what date, but if you go to Volume 1 events under Words, and if you go there, you can see when that event occurs.
Mm-hmm. The clock says I have to stop. But you can see and hear Bruce Taylor and Lemoyne McLaughlin at outlets in which they love to speak. I know you have the Writers Read series at the library, Bruce, and Lemoyne, you're always prolific, and you are nice enough to stop in here at the studio whenever you're in Eau Claire, and you guys will continue to be mainstays, poet liaisons here on Spectrum West. Thanks for being with us, Bruce Taylor and Lemoyne McLaughlin.
Thanks for asking. Read local.
Thank you.
By the way, a good website to start your revelation is poets.org. Also, the event that Bruce mentioned in Chippewa Falls, the website for the Heidi Center is cvca.net. In the background, a little music of Gatto Barbieri. Passed away this week, jazz saxophonist. Also, as of yesterday, Bon Voyage Merle Haggard. The Chippewa Valley Roller Coaster Girls. Yeah, Roller Coaster Girls. Chippewa Valley Roller Girls host a big Saturday event. It is kind of a roller coaster if you think about it. Maybe that's a Freudian slip. Coming up, we'll find out some surprising facts and talk with a team member who personifies the nature of a very diverse roster. Spectrum Memo, this is the weekend of the 6th Annual Roots and Bluegrass Music Festival in River Falls. It's Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. RiverFallsBluegrass.com is that website. Before we get on to the Roller Girls and other exciting episodes in Spectrum West, there are always big things going on along the St. Croix River and in its valley. And during April, one of them is the Big Read, where people are reading and remembering the classic novel The Grapes of Wrath, hosting events around it. One such event is theatrical in nature, so naturally, who else to cover it other than our own Jim Oliver? Hey.
The Grapes of Wrath is a 1988 play adapted by Frank Galati from the 1939 John Steinbeck novel of the same name. The play won the 1990 Tony Award for Best Play. The Festival Theater production of the play will open Saturday and continue weekends through April 24th at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. Here to talk about The Grapes of Wrath is Jackie Johnson, former artistic director at the Festival Theater and director of the current production. Welcome back to Spectrum West.
Oh, thank you so much, Jim. It's really wonderful to talk with you again.
The book, as I recall, was rather large.
It is a long read. It's a great read, but a long one.
Yeah, just the play runs pretty long, too, doesn't it?
It does. It has, it's a two-act play with an intermission, about a 15-minute intermission.
Mm-hmm.
All told, audiences should be expect to be out in about 2.5 hours.
Oh. So is the play pretty true to the book?
It is. There is a lot of text that is taken directly from the amazing literature of John Steinbeck and uses his words really strategically. It also, of course, as you might imagine, condenses some of the thoughts and ideas and images that are present into the book into very strategic ways. Frank Galati did a great job of being able to take the essence of the Joad's trip and choose the characters that they really needed to meet along the way to kind of help propel the story forward in a timely and tight package for audiences. But it is beautiful. It's full of amazing literature and amazing language directly from John Steinbeck's writing.
Well, let's just refresh everybody's memory who perhaps read the book back in senior high, but maybe has forgotten a little bit about it.
Yeah, it follows the Joad family, primarily Tom Joad, who is one of the sons of Ma and Pa. Tom meets up with a character from his youth, Jim Casey, who used to be a reverend, and the first scene of the play kind of connects these two together as Tom is heading home to see his family again after 4 years in prison. He has been in prison for defending himself and killing a man in his community, so he'll tell you a little bit more about that in the play.
Mm-hmm.
But he comes back, meets up with Casey, and of course finds his family has been affected by the Dust Bowl. It takes place in 1938, and so his family has been forced off their land and decided that the best option for a better future would be to move to California. And so they pack up all of their belongings, the few that they have left, and travel across the country from Oklahoma down Route 66 to California to try to find a better life for themselves.
Well, I'm going to date myself here. I was born on a farm the year before Steinbeck published his work. And while my parents protected me from the struggles they had to endure to make a living, I had a pretty good idea how life was during the Great Depression. So what attracted you to the Grapes of Wrath, and are there some lessons to be taken from the story today?
Absolutely. I am incredibly struck by how some of these ideas and these images are just as present in our world culture currently. Audiences will see that happen for themselves as well. They'll be able to draw some parallels. But for those who are choosing to read the book before returning to see the show and participating in the big read in other ways, absolutely, there is so much present poverty, family, desire to be able to strive for a better life, to dream, to seek that out. And then, of course, people who are forced into kind of Hooverville-like circumstances, refugee camps. And as you might remember and as you may recall from the book, these people who were moved off their land were called Dust Bowl refugees and are referred to in current writing and in John Steinbeck's writing. So absolutely, I see a lot of circumstances that are both very reflective of the history that you're talking about your family having experienced, and then also current events that are very similar.
So how large is the cast?
Well, it's a whopping 19 cast members. It's pretty large for us,
I should say. This is part of the big read, is that correct?
That is correct, mm-hmm. Yes. ArtReach St. Croix has done such a wonderful job being able to bring the big read to our community from Stillwater and all over the St. Croix Valley, and we are so happy to be partnering with them again to participate in this way. This is the first year that Festival Theater has produced a full-length production as part of the big read, so it's bigger, as you imagine. It's an ambitious play for us, but it is such an amazing book to work on. It's such an amazing adaptation to imagine for our community. We're very proud to be able to bring it to life on stage.
She is Jackie Johnson, who is director of the Festival Theater production of The Grapes of Wrath. The show is being staged in the Black Box Theater. What kind of challenges does that create for the production?
Yeah, well, the first, of course, is going to be taking a world where you have to be able to go interior, exterior, from Hooverville camp to another part of California, the Weed Patch camp. You know, there's so many different locations. And, of course, there is. It calls for a truck, a jalopy on stage. So we've been very creative. These are the type of productions that I just love to think about and very happy to be able to direct. When audiences come, they'll be brought into a very imaginative space that helps to create a sense of expanse, even though it's a very tight, intimate setting for the show. I will say that one of my favorite things about being able to work in this Franklin Square black box is the intimacy of being able to be so close to the story. You can see so many details on the faces of the actors, the stories that they're telling, to hear the quiet moments as well as the loud moments. It is a very live, exciting space for such a heartfelt story as The Grapes of Wrath.
Are you doing this as a proscenium production, or is it in the round, or how are you? This intimacy is intriguing.
Yeah. It is a proscenium construction. We do have our audience kind of almost on an island. So at times, actors are entering from beside them, coming in. So the energy comes both ways at you from backstage and from behind you as you're sitting there watching the show. So it is kind of a classic proscenium, no curtains up or down or anything like that, as there's not fly space in this black box theater. But some really, I think, the energy that that space creates, especially with the sense of actors exiting towards you and around you, it really helps you feel like part of the story, and I hope that audiences will be brought in because of that.
I always thought that working in that kind of circumstance, I did a show in the round once, and it was interesting because you could hear the reaction of the audience very clearly as you were so close to them. It was quite an experience for the actors as well as for the audience.
Absolutely.
Now, there is some incidental music in the show.
Well, there is some music that is suggested in the script, and we have brought some live music vocally from our actors. Mm. There's a lot of amazing, I'm sure you know, music from the times that we are also pulling from. So music is an important part of telling the story, absolutely. That, with the addition of an amazing lighting design and sound design from Peter Weber, our technical director, it's an incredible storytelling production. I think audiences will be really intrigued by the creativity of this design team and Andrew Benson's artistic direction as well.
We introduced you as the former artistic director of the Festival Theater, former being the operative word here. What are you up to now?
Well, I recently got married at the end of last year and relocated to Madison, Wisconsin with my husband. He's been working there for several years, and so we've been kind of traveling back and forth to see each other. So it's fun to be able to kind of make a nest together again. I've been working kind of regionally. After this job, I'll head down to Riverside Theater for a short touring theater in the classroom experiences, working on Romeo and Juliet with Riverside Theater in Iowa City. And also, I've got some improv going on in Chicago. Being in Madison, it's just a couple of hours away, so I've been entertaining the thought of working down there a little bit as well.
Well, I hope things go well for you.
Well, thank you so much.
Well, we've been talking to Jackie Johnson, who is director of the Festival Theater production of The Grapes of Wrath. The show opens Saturday and continues weekends through April 24th. The Festival Theater's regular home is being renovated this year, so the show will be produced at the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. For ticket information, you can use your favorite internet search engine and find Festival Theater, with an R-E at the end, in St. Croix Falls. Jackie, thanks so much for being with us. It's great to talk to you again.
Oh, it's wonderful to talk with you. Thanks so much to you and your supporters, Jim.
As usual, wonderful job. What's on stage in Western Wisconsin? People always want to know. Well, Jim's still here. Let's ask him.
Thanks, Al. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will perform Disney's The Little Mermaid through Sunday at the State Theater in Eau Claire. The Grapes of Wrath will be staged by the Festival Theater of St. Croix Falls, opening Saturday and continuing weekends through April 24th. Glorious, the true story of Florence Foster Jenkins, the worst singer in the world, will be performed Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays through April 17th at the Phipps Center for the Arts in Hudson. The Little Shop of Horrors will be staged by the UW Stout Theater through Saturday and the following Friday and Saturday at the UW Stout Harvey Hall Theater in Menominee. Teens on Stage will perform Shakespeare's The Tragedy of Macbeth through Sunday at the Northern Star Theater in Rice Lake. The University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire Theater will perform Roustabout, The Great Circus Wreck, April 14th to the 16th and the 20th to the 24th in the Riverside Theater at the University. Mary Poppins will be performed by the Barron Spotlighters April 15th to the 17th and the 22nd to the 24th at the Barron Area Community Center. Unnecessary Farce will be staged Fridays and Saturdays through May 21st at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. I'm Jim Oliver.
Support for WPR comes from Freund Law Office, providing debt relief, debt collection, and bankruptcy services to individuals, businesses, and farmers throughout western Wisconsin. Freund is German for friend, FreundLaw.com. You're listening to Spectrum West. Thanks for doing so. Now here's something I'll bet you never thought you'd hear on this show. Roller derby. Well, it wasn't on my short list of prospects, but after seeing a full-page ad for a big event coming Saturday, I said, if I'm curious, maybe you are too. As part of who we are, it's Western Wisconsin culture, and once you scratch the surface, you discover a certain refinement amid the unabashed display of competitive spirit. Turns out it's fun, can be a good hobby, it's exercise, and spectators often become fans in a hurry. Plus, there are pleasant, scholarly surprises, like discovering one of the skaters on the Chippewa Valley Roller Girls squad competing under a creative pseudonym, most have threatening, mischievous nicknames, is actually by day an assistant professor of chemistry at the University of Wisconsin, Eau Claire. It's a whole different day, you know. I mean, years ago, I can picture the head of a department coming in saying,
Patricia, this thing that you're doing in the evening,
you know.
But
not anymore.
No.
Well, that's good. You are the current president of the Chippewa Valley Roller Girls.
Yes, I'm the president of the board of directors.
I am so curious about the first time that you said to yourself, I think I'd like to do that. How did your involvement in the roller derby begin?
Well, I moved to Eau Claire as a new assistant professor of chemistry, and I wanted some kind of hobby. And when I was deciding to move, my brother had said, well, you know, Eau Claire's a pretty cool town. They even have a roller derby team. And I thought, that sounds cool. And so I looked online and I saw some pictures and I thought these women looked really tough and they looked really athletic and they looked a little punk rock. And I thought, you know, I think I could do that thing. Uh-huh. It might be scary and it might be intimidating, but it looks like a lot of fun.
But obviously to me, some skill has to be involved even beforehand. Do you have to be a good skater? Or do they teach you or what happens?
Yeah, I mean, you have to develop your skills. Some people come in as good skaters and some people don't. And we will train anybody from wherever level that they're at to whatever level they want to get to. I mean, we're always goal-oriented, and some people train and progress quickly, and other people train and progress a bit slowly.
Yeah.
But we like to think of it as a very inclusive environment for a lot of different kinds of women who want to increase their fitness and maybe increase their strength and resilience. In any way, you challenge yourself, you get stronger, you learn how to skate, you feel pretty agile and fast, and it's a lot of fun.
So what pleasant surprises have you had providing yourself with this very unique hobby? What have you found that it does for you, the balance between what you do during the day and what you do when you're on the track?
It really helps reduce stress.
Okay.
And, I mean, you'd think that sometimes it could be more stressful because it's full contact. You really are taking some hard hits. You're putting it all out there on the track. But if you leave a game and you just feel like I did everything that I could that day, I pushed myself to my limits and I tried some new things, and sometimes I was successful and sometimes I wasn't, there's just such great sense of pride and power and strength that I feel like so many women don't have a venue for. I've likened this to the tenure process and the publishing process. When you try to get academic papers published, you have to send them out, and somebody is going to rip them to shreds. Mm-hmm. Those are your reviewers. And then you have to get back up and you say, okay, now I will make it better. And when you're playing roller derby and you're trying to jam and they are knocking you down and they are knocking you out, you have to get back up on your feet. You have to think about it in a new way. You have to not let it destroy you. You say, this is the game. This is what I'm playing.
Ah, so you call it a game. You know, a lot of people perceive it as a race. I mean, you're going around a track, which is what most people associate with a race. You know, we've all heard about roller derby. Tell me about a typical game or match. What happens? How long does it take? Who wins and how do you win?
Yeah, so we call them bouts. So okay. It does have this kind of boxer connotation to it. But the score earners are called jammers, and they will wear a helmet cover that has a star on them. And that's like a target, right? That you can think of them as the puck. You can think of them as the ball. But they are trying to get through the pack of blockers as fast as they can so that they can score points as they pass them. And there's a little difference where, like, the first time they go through, they are gaining advantage called a lead jammer status, which means as they come around the next time, that's when they score. And then they can call off the jam if they're the lead jammer. The other jammer can still keep scoring points. So the lead jammer has to have more going on in her mind where she's thinking, I can probably get 2 points and then call it off, and the other jammer can't get any. Or even if I go through once, she might not be able to get to the pack, so I'm going to get all of my points. Or she's still stuck, and I can keep lapping her. And if the jammer laps the opposing jammer, she gets an extra point for that. So they can go as long as 2 minutes per jam. And there are some rules about, like, you can lose your lead jammer status and it will just automatically go to 2 minutes if you get a penalty or something like that. So up to 2 minutes per jam. And then we do 30-minute halves with like 15 or 20-minute halftime for about a full hour of gameplay.
Oh, wow.
That's divided into these really short spurts of jams that could be, sometimes they're pretty short, like 30 seconds to up to 2 minutes.
Okay.
That add up to 30 minutes per half.
Sounds like a combination individual sport and team sport.
Totally. And like the blockers have the daunting task of both having to do defense and offense at the same time. They want to block that opposing jammer, and they want to help their own jammer as much as possible.
I mean, this is serious stuff. You know, this isn't like professional wrestling where you're just putting on a show.
No, oh no, it's real. I've seen broken ankles. I've seen concussions happen. You know, these women are pushing their bodies hard, and it's a risk to do this stuff, but it's rewarding. I mean, injuries happen. And what we want to do is try to minimize those injuries by safe gameplay and making sure that people get trained well enough. But, you know, you're falling on concrete floors. Everybody has to wear helmets and knee pads and mouth guards and elbow pads. You're making contact with people, and there's a risk involved with that.
We're on the phone with Dr. Patricia Cleary. It is kind of neat. Assistant Professor of Chemistry at the University of Wisconsin-Eau Claire, a.k.a., why don't you give us your name?
Socket Wench.
Sock It Wench. That's half the fun right there.
Is to come yeah.
You came up with your own name, or did they supply it for you, or what?
I came up with my own name.
Good for you. I can tell that you're an educated person. By the way, some of the other favorite names that I saw on your website are Mandozer, Trouble Gum, Slampire Bat, Sherry O'Scary, Pitbull Scarier, and Armin Slammer. I know time is of the essence because you're a very busy person. Just a couple more things. Students. You get some students that are saying, wow, that is so cool that you do that. Did they show up and watch you?
Some of them will. Yeah, it took me a few years to admit it to my students. I'll have to say, I was thinking they might think that I'm an intimidating character enough, just because chemistry can be an intimidating thing for students.
That's true.
So to find out that your chemistry professor also beats people up on the weekends might just be a little too terrifying, but I don't really beat anybody up too bad.
How about recruiting other professors? Any other females have said, Patricia, I think I'd like to do that myself.
I try, but,
yeah,
you know,
doesn't work.
It takes a certain adrenaline junkie to do this.
Yeah, you know, I didn't mean to stereotype that voice, meaning it had to be a big, burly woman, because there's some pretty diminutive gals in this. It's all attitude, I think.
Yeah, you can be of many different body sizes, and you use that to your advantage playing this game. Mm-hmm. You can be small, and you better be fast, because if we catch you, we can make you fly. You can be big, and you can be just unstoppable because nobody can get around you, and you can use that momentum to your advantage. What I really love about this sport is that it's empowering of many different kinds of women, many different ages of women, many different body types, and it really comes down to feeling strong and empowered.
I can't let you go without you telling me what's going on Saturday night. You got a big deal. There's a whole full-page ad in Volume 1 about this.
Yeah, we have a doubleheader with two teams from the UP, one from Keweenaw and another one from Marquette called Dead River Derby. We are going to play all of our skaters that have come up through the ranks and have passed enough skills to be able to play. So you're going to see all different kinds of skaters that we have in the league. We have 18 possible people that could skate, and we're going to see a lot of them. So doors open at 5, and I think the first game starts at 6, but I could be wrong.
Yeah, I'll tell people all the particulars. And
yeah,
tell them where and when everything. You guys, you have to go teach young people and brighten our future in the world. So thanks so much for being with us, Patricia Cleary. Keep up the great work in both your lives.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you so much.
It's called Hit It and Quidditch. Little Harry Potter thing there. Saturday evening at the Eau Claire Indoor Sports Center on Craig Road. Doors open at 5. Event starts at 6. This could be another biggie scratched off the bucket list. By the way, the featured charity is Habitat for Humanity. ChippewaValleyRollerGirls.com has all you need to know and see. That is, until you show up in person. Spectrum Memo, UW River Falls celebrates the 50th year of the Commissioned Composer Project. Hosting composer Amy Williams, the anniversary concert featuring UWRF students is 7:30 this evening if you're listening Thursday in Abbott Concert Hall. There are more talks and performances Friday beginning at 11 a.m. UW River Falls Dance Theater presents their annual spring concert in the Blanche Davis Theater next Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday at 7:30 each evening. Lots going on, as usual, in western Wisconsin. Words by Wickland, backing by Brown, control by Collenback. Thank you. Next week, it's jazz festival time, madrigal magic, folk music in Luck, Wisconsin, and more. Always more on Spectrum West. My name is Al Ross. Thanks for being here. We'll do it again next week.